This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Welcome to For Colored Nerds.
This is Eric.
This is Brittany.
And today, kids.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about football.
Yeah, football, which is...
a topic near and dear to your heart, I know.
It's very funny. It's very fucking funny.
But no, I mean, we're going to talk about football. I've been wanting to talk about football for a while. You actually expressed a lot of interest in it, too.
I read about football. I obviously am not a player of football. And I don't watch it. And I don't like it. But at all.
I don't. So, are you a fan?
Casual. But I am interested in it, and I read about it.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I'm definitely a fan.
True. Who's your team?
My team, sadly, are the Jets. And the Jets are pretty terrible.
I thought your team has to be the Titans, because you're from Tennessee.
So, my team should be the Titans, but I was real bitter. When the Titans first moved to Tennessee from... They were originally...
It's within the past decade only, right? That they've been in Tennessee.
It's actually happened in the 90s.
Okay. Well.
So in the 90s, they were originally the Houston Oilers. And the team got moved to Tennessee.
And they became...
the Tennessee Oilers. So when they moved, Memphis, which is where they originally played, mm-hmm. did not want to foot the entire bill to build them a stadium. So the team
was there any stadium in Memphis whatsoever? Or in the surrounding area?
Yeah, but they were playing in stadiums that were built for college teams.
Basically. Oh, that's kind of rude.
Yeah, they needed a stadium. And Memphis was willing to commit some of the funds, but they weren't going to pay for the entirety of it.
Were they being cheap or did they not have the money?
To be honest, I don't know. I was like 8.
Okay. All right. Cool. Okay. So you were privy.
Yeah. Right? No, I'm honestly not sure. But I remember a lot of people were mad. I mean, I feel like the majority of people kind of gotten over it. But
knowing you being petty.
Yeah. I mean, you know me.
I know. You've managed to stay pissed off for 20 years.
Exactly. So, at the time, I was like, okay, well, I need a new team. They're moving to Nashville. Fuck that. So I started watching the Jets. And at the time, the Jets were pretty decent. They were never really... like, great, but they were pretty decent. They would get to the, divisional championship.
Sure.
Relatively frequently. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I was a fan. I just kind of stuck with that as they've gotten worse and worse and worse.
They're bad?
Yeah, they're pretty terrible.
Who is Mark Sanchez? Does he still play for the New York Jets?
Mark Sanchez actually does not still play for the Jets.
That is the last time I checked in on them.
He used to play for the Jets, but he does not anymore. He plays for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Okay, wait. I know who plays for the Philadelphia Eagles. Michael Vick.
Michael Vick actually does not play for the Philadelphia Eagles. He used to play for the Philadelphia Eagles. He now plays for the Jets.
What?
Yeah.
Levels to this shit.
Yeah, man. Life comes at you fast.
Why does he play for the Jets if they're so bad? Why are they bad if Michael Vick plays for them? I guess it's just one player.
Well, Michael Vick is also kind of old now. So there's that. In addition to that, he was not the starting quarterback. They actually drafted a new quarterback called Geno Smith, and he turned out to be amazingly bad, just really, really bad. We have terrible luck with quarterbacks. So anyway, Geno Smith has been terrible. Wait.
Michael Vick is a quarterback?
Michael Vick is a quarterback, correct.
Interesting.
Okay. He runs a lot.
Is that why he's kind of slim?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there are heavier quarterbacks. Ben Roethlisberger is a pretty heavy dude.
I don't like him.
Well, I mean, yeah, a lot of people don't. I mean, yeah. He's also the worst.
He's like a fucking asshole to me.
That would probably be right. But anyway, back to...
Oh, yeah, the topic in hand.
Back to the topic in hand. So, I mean, we've been meaning to talk about football for a while. Mm-hmm. And I actually wanted to wait a little bit to create just a bit of distance from kind of, I guess, the controversy of the moment, which is kind of the Ray Rice situation. Obviously, he assaulted his wife in an elevator. And that kind of overtook, like, that was the narrative for football. And it's definitely important because the league is terrible at showing that they care about women who are fans.
Yeah. Or even just like they're terrible at showing that they give a fuck about women in general. Who,
yeah.
Especially, you know, people who are the families of their players, the families of their employees.
Yeah. I mean, there's that. There's that aspect of it. There's, you know, the fact that I think 40% of fans are women. I think that's the last statistic that I read.
That makes like some sense.
Yeah. And in addition to that, it's just bad for a lot of reasons. Like, there, you know, there is the disciplinary aspect of it. Like, football has always been kind of stereotypical. You say if you play football, usually you can get out of a lot of things, like in high school and college. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that narrative seemingly has still not changed, even at the professional level.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And so there, that kind of overtook everything. And not to say that it's not a useful conversation, because I think it definitely is.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that I think are affecting football and even potentially will bring about its end eventually.
Yeah.
Aren't necessarily directly related to that.
No, I would agree. I told you, I'm not even a casual viewer of football. And I honestly mean years, maybe I'll catch a game like once a year, once every other year in its entirety.
Yeah.
But I spent a lot of time reading about it. And as much as I've certainly kept up with not just Ray Rice, but Jovan Belcher and other, you know, instances of domestic violence within the league and families that are a part of the league, I find the other larger things that we're going to be talking about today, those are the types of pieces that I gravitate toward when I'm reading about football, speaking more to, like, just for example, the violence.
Yeah, definitely the violence, which is the thing that I think that's been kind of bubbling the most recently. Mm-hmm. In addition, there's, you know, the injury aspect of it that results from the violence.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Violence and football weren't necessarily used in the same context until relatively recently, I feel. Like, I feel like that word is, I mean, people would say it's strong. Like, oh, football is not violent.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really look at it on the face, like, violence is causing... is attempting to use force to harm someone or to achieve some sort of means.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, if I'm running at you full speed with pads on and I'm a, you know, 250, 300 pound guy,
you're intending to cause harm.
I'm intended to cause harm.
And that's pretty fucking violent.
It's pretty fucking violent. And I mean, I even say that as a fan. It's one of those things that people try to obscure the fact that that's why we watch.
That's what I've always tried to figure. Like, I can see the appeal. Just let's say we're observing this in a vacuum. I can see the appeal of Bloodsport because, you know, people love boxing. People like wrestling. And professional wrestling is obviously sports entertainment. It's not a real sport because a lot of it is, you know, predetermined.
It's theater.
Theater, exactly. It's purely entertainment, but people still like watching that same blood sport. People like to watch people beat the shit out of each other. Same way, honestly, people like watching people fight in public.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie. I was outside of the club the other day and I could tell that people were fighting inside because the doors kept swinging open.
World star.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought. But then actually I saw them pull out this like 5'6" white guy with like... Oh, half zip with like a cashmere half zip by the ankles. I just watched this like little tiny white guy get pulled out by his ankles like out of the club. But I still wanted to watch. I wanted to see people start fighting on the sidewalk.
I mean,
it's very human. It's rude.
Yeah.
But it's very human.
But you want to see that. And it's the same thing with football. You know, you want to see a big hit. You want to see, you like how I transition back, right?
Yeah.
But no, you want to see a big hit. You want to see the spectacle of it all. Because otherwise it's just kind of, I mean, football is... It can be slow. It's not really
a slow sport. It's not baseball slow.
Yeah, it's not baseball slow. It's not like golf. But it can be slow if there's nothing interesting happening.
Now, this is the thing. I understand what you're saying. And I get it. Like I said, on a human level, like, you want to watch some wild shit happen. And football allows you to watch a series of wild ass shit pop off for like
real quick,
like multiple days a week.
Yeah.
For like, what, 6-7 months out of the year?
Yeah, just about.
Yeah, okay. So I get that, but while I do understand the appeal, I don't like it. I just don't care for it. I find it kind of boring. But I still watch people get hit sometimes, and I'm taken aback just at how forceful it is. Like you say, like you know, they give you the stats of all the players while you're watching. You know how big these dudes are.
Yeah.
And it's just
that's
like...
That's part of the appeal. And honestly, it's something that I've struggled with more and more as I've gotten older, as I can understand what's actually happening. And I play football, so it's not like
how old were you play football?
I was like 15.
I think you said you were junior. 16,
somewhere in there. You know, I made the team, played like training camp, all the way up to like the season is about to start. And I actually quit right before the first game. I was like, fuck that.
Wait, why do you tell, you quit before the...
Yeah, I quit before the first game. We had like scrimmages, we had like, before the first...
Like a little play game, right?
Well, it's like a...
It's fake game.
It's like a game. It doesn't count towards anything. Right. So like, imagine like preseason.
Right, like play, right.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I played in like those games and we've had like, so we had some scrimmages with like other teams from other schools. But then when it came time for the actual season, like the real shit popping, I was like, nah, I can't do it.
You know what though? That's just like your boy, Jonathan Chait.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't quit, but he actually, I didn't mean to shade you by that.
Yeah,
but no. One of the things, Eric actually did a really good job picking out what I needed to read this week, because as I expressed, like, I don't understand football. Like, if I'm honest, if I see it on television, it's nonsense. Like, I just watch, to me, it's like people running around. I don't get it. And I don't watch it, but I understand it as an industry. I understand it as a machine. I understand it as, here we go. We can take it back to something that I know. Miuccia Prada has this quote where she says, fashion is instant language. And that's what football is. I watched one season, I think it was the 2010-2011 football season.
Yeah.
Because I had a whole bunch of girlfriends when I was living in DC who were super into football. And I realized if I wanted to hang out with them on Sundays, they were like, we're not going to brunch on Sunday. Like, we're going to Old Dominion, which if you live in DC or the DC area, you know that Old Dominion is, it ain't Buckingham Palace. So we're going to go to Old Dominion. We're going to get a bunch of fucking hot wings. We're going to get a couple towers of beer and we're going to camp out here for like 6 hours. If I wanted to kick it with them, then that's what I had to do. So we had a fantasy league and everything like that. And I came in second in our league, which was surprising.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I think I watched like maybe 10 games.
Yeah.
And also like I supported the Lions. So it was really interesting that I even managed
to. And that was when the Lions started getting good.
Yeah. Well, because we got sued.
Yeah.
That was the season we got sued and, you know, things started getting, I don't know. Are we good? I feel like we're just like decent.
You guys are still pretty
good. We turned
good.
It around.
You kind of struggle. I mean, you have Calvin Johnson, so it's like Megatron.
I don't know who the fuck that is, but that's cool. Sorry. I don't know who that is. Yeah, Eric did a really good job picking out things to read. Even though, like I said, I don't like football and I don't really understand it at all, I do understand what it does to people. People who have otherwise nothing to talk about, they, over football, they can like break bread. And one of the best articles that I got the chance to read this week, which I had sort of looked at before, but now having read all of this other supporting text, it makes a lot more sense, was the Jonathan Chait piece. I think it was what liberals get wrong about football.
Yep.
Yes.
And this piece I actually thought was really good too, because the thing about it is a lot of times when people are talking about football, it's purely about the sport and not necessarily about their experiences within the sport. So people try to create almost a bit of distance between like normal people and what they can appreciate about football and what it's like to actually live it. Almost like, I have no idea what's going on unless I'm playing football at a professional level. And I say that more so when you get to the actual talk about like concussions and things like that. Because people try to say, well, unless you really are into it, if you're playing football right, then it's a safe sport.
What? If you're playing football right, you're getting your ass fucking knocked off. Yeah.
Consistently.
Yeah.
But I thought what Jonathan Chait did a really good job of doing, and I don't actually give him props a lot because sometimes he gets on my fucking nerves, to be honest. He did a great job of kind of building the story from following almost like a complete narrative of talking about his experiences playing in high school and how the violence and like what people were trying to do, where that comes from, you know, how that grows. And people's kind of relationship with that. So he talks a little bit about one of the things that I thought was really interesting. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to pull up the quote.
Pull up the quote. Refer to the text as Brother Tavis would say.
One of the things I thought was really good he talks about kind of the chauvinistic belligerence that boys often have. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a really good point when you think about the violence aspect of it, and also the like overarching story that football players are more violent
than regular people.
He talks about how, and this is a quote verbatim, he says, "Football channels boys' chauvinistic belligerence into supervised forms. It shapes them within boundaries and gives them positive meaning. These virtues, like those often attributed to the military, can feel like cliches." And I think that's where he's talking about that. Like, you need to be violent. You need to act in a specific way mm-hmm. in order to be civilized, to a certain mm-hmm. example. So these cliches are imported from an earlier era. But this discipline and directed ambition are, as every social scientist knows, the bedrock of success in adulthood. So I agree kind of with his statement on mm-hmm. the face, which is basically we take, like, football takes boys who
might otherwise be running around driving people crazy,
and it channels that into something that's productive. And in theory, if you follow the program,
yeah,
once you become an adult, you've been able to process this, and it helps you evolve into this man. And so I think that's interesting in how, for a lot of the people and a lot of the critics of football, mm-hmm. how it's almost perceived as the opposite. So if you think about playing football, and that's something that's channeling you into manhood, mm-hmm. but people's perspective is that football players are these really, really violent, angry, consistently like hyper-masculine people, men, you know, who are just looking to continue the violence that they have on the field.
Now, the thing is, though, is that there's one major difference between what Jonathan Chait was talking about as far as his high school days playing football. And, you know, when we sort of take the same idea and like extrapolate it, let's say, yeah. and apply it to the NFL, is that there's still, the NFL is an institution.
Yeah,
I know that football in general is an institution. You know, it's a great American pastime, but the NFL is an institution. Not just, I'm not talking about a business, or not just talking about a league, or talking about an organization that other companies do business with on a sponsorship level. I'm talking about there's a level, just like with almost, just like the police force or yeah. the military. There's a level of protection that comes with. And almost fame. I mean, there's definitely fame in the NFL, but not necessarily fame with the police force or the military, but there's an authority that can give you the same drunkenness as fame does.
Same power.
The same power, exactly. I think that it's not just the masculinity, it's not just the misguided and hyper-masculinity of football, or the violence of football, but also that there's this masculine organization. I feel like masculine isn't even the right word, but there's this organization that is supporting this structure that's supporting this hyper masculine, super violent space. And then you add money to that, and you add notoriety, and you add fame. And like, that's the other component. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That allows for people to like, just like how famous people in general act a fuck. What did we talk about?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A couple weeks ago, like famous people in general will act a fucking fool because there's this cloak of just
invincibility almost.
Exactly. That makes it okay. But when I think about, I want to go back to the point where that you just read about discipline. So you used to play high school sports. Technically, I did too. I did a suburban, primarily a young women's sport called pom-pom, P-O-M-P-O-N. I think only people in like Michigan, Ohio, possibly even Arizona in some places do it. Mm-hmm. But it's not like by any means like a national sport. It's sort of like a cross between like cheerleading, dance team, and like drill team. I can't describe it. If you want to Google it, it will make more sense to you. But I was really, really good at it when I was in high school. I was like a varsity athlete. I was on the Mid-American Pom-Pom All-Star team, which meant that I was, you know, one of the best girls in the state. And then I also coached for a year. Mm-hmm. I took a team that basically started off as the Bad News Bears.
I mean, that's every sports team, sadly.
Yeah, exactly. It started off as the Bad News Bears. And then we were first in our division in the state at the end of the season. Yeah, no, I was a pretty good coach. So I understand, like, when he's talking about football, to me, that's not just football. It takes, you know, we had some girls that were pain in my motherfucking ass. I love those children so much. I still do. They're wonderful, wonderful, wonderful young ladies. But in an organized setting, some of these kids will have you driving up the damn wall. The things that he says about football are easily applicable to pom-pom. I imagine they would be to swimming or to cheerleading or to basketball. Like, we used to have our practices in this dance room that was surrounded by exercise equipment. So sometimes we would be working out simultaneously, like with the football team.
Yeah.
And the football coach respected the shit out of us because of how the amount of discipline that me and one of my very good friends, who was my, I guess, my boss of sorts. I was a JV coach, and she was like head coach and varsity coach. The discipline with which we ran the program, how they were behaved, like, we were dedicated. These girls were practicing, I mean, like, I think we were in the at least double digits of hours of practice. I mean, we did, I think, 2-3 hours after school, Monday through Thursday. During competition season, there was an extra 3 hours on Friday and 4 hours on Saturday. We practiced every single day but Sunday, and they only get 1 month off every single year.
Wow.
Right, yeah.
SRD.
No, it was. It was a really intense sport. It's interesting to me that I'm curious as to, for somebody who I think, and actually I'm from the same area as Jonathan Chait, the high schools and stuff like that he was talking about, he was in our same athletic conference. So I understood a lot of what he was getting at. But it's not like other sports don't do that for young people. Not just young men, but young women. It's not like tennis might not do that. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, I think that's, I mean, honestly.
To me, that was like the biggest blind spot of the entire art. For me, that was the biggest blind spot. Obviously, because I'm a woman, former high school sports coach, and I've seen the same development. I've been on both sides of the coin.
Yeah.
I've coached and I've been an athlete. And the things that he described are not particular to only boys, and it's not particular to football. And it's annoying to me that that was like a central argument of his was like, yeah, football does all these fucked up things to people's bodies.
But it
bodies.
Also does.
Yeah, but it also gives them discipline, which they can only get
from
smashing their body into somebody else's.
Well, you're right. The fast version of that is, you're right. The thing about it is, football has this, even more so than baseball. Like, so to take a step back, baseball is America's pastime,
mm-hmm.
right? But there's something about the sport of football that has this, like, cult or vaulted status.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it honestly results from the violence. Because of how violent it is, there's a perception, which is probably, not even probably, it's inaccurate,
mm-hmm.
that because it's so violent, it takes a special type of tough
yes.
athlete, you know, who can go against all these other factors to play this sport, to play this wonderful, beautiful sport. And that's mostly, like, you know, it's mostly bullshit. I mean, I'm a healthy weight.
Yeah, but, I know what you're referring to. Go ahead.
But when I played football, I was probably the scrawniest person within a 50-mile radius.
Yeah, I was going to say, I met you a couple years later, and you appeared, from photos that I've seen now, you appeared to have put on weight by the time I met you. And by the time I met you, in 2005, if I had sneezed, you would have blown right into the fucking Chesapeake Bay.
I wouldn't. The sad thing is, that's not even shade. Like, you're speaking facts.
Yeah, facts.
And I played football. And it was something to say, like, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that I was an excellent football player.
No, you quit before the fucking season started. Were you even really a football player?
Well, no, I mean, shit, I got hit like a football player. I played, you know what I'm saying? Like, I made the team. Mm-hmm. Like, I was on the team. I had a jersey. I had a number.
Went to camp.
Yeah, I went to camp.
It was like Remember the Titans.
It was not like Remember the
Titans. That's what I think it's like.
Nothing is actually like Remember the Titans. Like, there was, interesting enough, this is an aside, but they did an interview with a lot of the other people who went to that school around that time. And they were like, it was a load of bullshit. Like, basically the guy who played Denzel Washington's character,
mm-hmm.
had an amazingly revisionist history of what he remembered that situation to be like.
Oh, so he was just like, this is what I did.
Yeah, you know, I got everybody right. You know,
right.
I pulled their card. I gave them this discipline. I showed them this mental toughness and the sport, the game, the desire to win.
And then that's how they solve racism.
Yeah, that's how it always works. Right,
right, right, right,
yeah,
right.
Exactly. But anyway, so that was a little bullshit. It was, I mean, it was hard. It was ridiculously hard. Like, I mean, I had to, like, lift weights. Like, I, you know.
You had to lift weights when you were that tiny?
Yeah, I mean, that actually helped me to put on the, like, the 5 pounds I needed to not die.
I was
going to
say, 5 pounds back then.
Yo, it's real. I was looking in the mirror like, oh, snap, I'm cut. No, I mean.
It was ribs.
Yeah, exactly. But, no, I mean, it was very, very difficult. But it wasn't, I mean, I played pretty much every sport, and it wasn't that much different. And honestly, that was a part of what led to me quitting, was that I was like, I enjoy other sports more. Like, this isn't actually for what it's supposed to be, for this, mm-hmm. For the status that it gives you of playing the sport. It's really not that different. You just get hit a lot.
That sounds awful. Like, it just sounds awful to me.
Well, I mean, at the time, you're so, like, honestly, you're so drunk off of the sport itself, too. Of adrenaline, that it's fun. Like, at the time, I wasn't really thinking about, like, you get hit, it's like, oh, you got hit? You got hit hard? Like, that's a badge of honor. I mean, that's a part of, if you hit a specific player, like really, really hard, mm-hmm. they give you a sticker for your helmet.
Literally a badge of honor.
Yeah. Yeah, straight up. So, that aspect of it is what a lot of people allow to obscure the fact that football is another sport. But that aspect of it is also what proves that football is more dangerous yes. than every other sport.
Well, that was the thing that freaked me out. Not just more dangerous, like, in, like, the literal, obvious, like, violent, physical sense. But reading Chait, I was, like, stunned by how rose-colored his glasses were when he was remembering what it felt like to play as a teenager. And he was just like, you know, I'm successful at this. My friends are successful at these other things now that we're all grown up. But, you know, we talk about how alive we used to feel. Like, you know, playing football in high school was the closest we felt, you know, to really being alive. And I think about it and I'm like, I was really into theater when I was in high school. I remember that type of feeling that you get, you know what I'm saying? When you're doing the thing that you're supposed to be doing, when you're supposed to be doing it. I used to get that. Am I an actress today? No, I'm just a person who talks too much.
But do you look back on that time?
I do look back on that time with fondness, but it's also like, you can get it, that feeling you can get at other places. I enjoy doing theater a lot, but I also enjoy playing sports. And I also enjoyed writing, and I also enjoy hanging out with my friends. Like, I don't mean necessarily like they all gave me the same level of fun, but I had a solid 2 to 3 activities when I was younger that gave me that adrenaline rush and that made me feel like I had really tapped into something that I was supposed to be doing. It's just very interesting to me that he felt like that was the only, you know, like that was the only way. And it also creeped me out, if I'm honest, to hear almost the way he exalted his teenage football playing self. Like it felt very like Friday Night Lights, like, you know, very Jack and Diane, very like, it made me feel weird. Like you're kind of like getting rid of all of this logic, like fuck all this logic, fuck these facts.
That you just stated.
And let's instead discuss the fact that, like, I never felt alive. And if you haven't played this sport and you haven't, he kind of got toward that at the end where he was just like, if you haven't played this sport and you don't know what it feels like and da 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 da, and y'all need to get real or get with it. And I was just like, son, like you literally got rid of logic and replaced that with the warm feelings that you had of playing football in like the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, I mean, here's what I'll say. Like I played for a summer and a half a fall. And mm-hmm. I even like I remember that time extremely vividly. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had like he described this kind of a moment when he earned his sticker. You know, he had this really big hit. And how that he went into like how that affected like the rest of his football, mm-hmm. like, you know, career, if you call it that.
Yeah.
But I have that same experience. I think what's difficult for me to like the reason why my experience isn't on the same level as his is just because I started to get disillusioned with all the other facts that he put out in the rest of the article. You know, and like that makes it difficult to really like think back and say, oh man, that was some of the best times of my life. And, mm-hmm. and the truth is I could have got a concussion, which is, you know, at the end of the day, one concussion isn't the end of the world.
No, I had a couple in my life.
But it could have been a lot worse. In addition to mm-hmm. that, it wasn't an experience that shaped me that I couldn't have gotten somewhere else.
That's the thing. It's not something to me that the things that people describe when they're talking about the merit of high school. I'm speaking specifically about high school football. It's not something that you couldn't get elsewhere. It's just not, it's not something that you couldn't get elsewhere.
But I mean, the thing that, that he, you know, I wouldn't say that he's off, I wouldn't say that he's off base or that hasn't happened before, is that's how football is perceived. Mm-hmm. Like in the South, like football is different everything. Animal. Ball is life. Like, you know, like literally football is everything. And like Texas, in like in a lot of those like surroundings.
Oklahoma too.
Yeah. Like that is what you do. You know, I mean, basketball is big too, but football is on a different level. And everybody kind of feeds into that. Mm-hmm. And because it's that blood sport, it's almost like it's on another level. And people are really blinded by that. And that's why I think this time right now is mm-hmm. really interesting, because there's never been a time where, at least that I've perceived, where the volume of voices speaking science and facts yes. about football.
Not just science and facts, but also like we're seeing a lot of the narratives now combined with the science and facts. Yeah. So it's like Junior Seau, when that was happening, there was enough information about CTE and that type of shit for all of us to kind of be like, yo, you know what I'm saying? Jovan Belcher, what? Yeah.
Like, it's really, really deep that all these things are happening at one point. And then you still have, and I struggle with this too. You still mm-hmm. have those memories mm-hmm. and you feel warm inside. And that, I think what people are really struggling with is allowing themselves to get to a place now where they can say, you know what? This is how I felt. This is how it made me feel at that time. But I need to take a step back mm-hmm. and really assess whether or not this is right.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Save big money on everything for your spring projects at Menards. We have all of your garden and landscaping essentials. Master Garden Premium Garden Soil contains a slow-release fertilizer that feeds gardens for up to 9 months. It produces better results and is ready to use for all your gardening needs. Save big on Menards' great selection of garden and landscaping products. Compare brands in-store or online at menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Throw in some music.
We can watch the game. Or we could keep it simple.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah, this is something that I can continue to support.
And that's something that actually I didn't connect with it at the time, but Ta-Nehisi Coates, you know, like a couple years ago.
Yeah, he's writing about football. That's how I got started reading about it, because he wrote about it like it was a structure and yeah. not just like something that I needed to come in with prior knowledge about.
Yeah, he outlined his struggles with the sport, like mm-hmm. through his blog. And around the time of Junior Seau, who was like one of his like favorite players, mm-hmm. you know, when he died, he was like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I have a kid. You know, I love this sport, but something is not, like, there's blood in the water.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I remember that article, Junior Seau is Dead, is in the Atlantic, and he, or on theatlantic.com, toward the end, or maybe it was like an update of the post, he mentioned a quote from some NFL official that was like, oh, you know, we'll never know what it was on the field that, you know, that may have injured Junior Seau. He was just like, I had to stop listening after that.
And that shit is crazy.
It's like you say something and, you know, there's blood in the water. I'll say this. I've spent more time in the past week than I have in at any point in time. Even when I was, like, watching football and I had a fantasy team. I spent more time in the past week just gaining a real critical understanding of it. And on one hand, I think a lot of shit about football is totally fucked up. But on the other hand, I still understand the appeal of it. And I don't want to be so like flippant as somebody who doesn't give a fuck about football to say, well, this shit doesn't matter to me. So I see how people struggle with it. And I see why people want to maintain either the sport as it is or figure out a way to keep it around in a way that's going to be more safe for people who play it. But there's so much wrong with the organization.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Even just, you know, Junior Seau and the way that they handled Jovan Belcher. Keep going back to those two. And the way that they handled, you know, the way that they've handled Ray Rice. The organization is a hot ass mess. To me, it seems like the organization is like, that's where the blood is.
Yeah.
in the water.
Well, I mean,
obviously the sport doesn't exist in a vacuum, but like the organization seems to take it to another level. And even, I don't know a ton about college football, but just the NCAA in general kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies just because you have all these boys and young women sometimes too, but let's be real, when we talk about football and we're talking about basketball, you have these boys that are making all this money for you. Like March, I don't like sports, but like basketball is something I can kind of like get into. And like, you know, date black man. You really can't escape it. I think in my whole entire dating life, I managed to date two people who didn't watch any sports and didn't care. Even if they don't seem like, you know, there's a lot of childish, you know, my past is littered with Childish Gambino types. And they'll still pull out on Saturday. They'll still want to watch college games. They're still going to, you know what I'm saying? They're still going to be even just kind of, even on the fringes, interested. Yeah, I have a lot of major issues with the NFL, obviously, but also the NCAA and the way that, like, these boys make all this money for you, but they can't accept any money. Like, what is that?
They can't sell.
Jameis, my man, who sell the crab legs. Jameis is, first of all,
he's wild. That's
that husband material.
Wild.
When I didn't even know who he was when I was like, you sell crab legs? Bang. Instant bang. But yeah, he signed some autographs or something like that.
He signed some autographs and he was signing merchandise and giving it to, I think, a booster or someone to basically sell on like eBay or some shit like that. And he was getting a kickback for it. So the dude was like, oh, I'm going to sell this shit for $500 and give you $250.
Yeah.
I got you. And you can't do that. You can't make any money from your talent while you're a student athlete.
Exactly.
And this shit is fucked up. And that's honestly why I would disagree with you a little bit. And it's not just the NFL. It's really, sadly, football as an apparatus. Like at every level, it's set up to facilitate the sport. It's an institution that is set up to sustain itself.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's going to sustain itself, in spite of these real serious fucking problems, then some shit has to get overlooked.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing about that is fair compensation at the easy level.
Mm-hmm.
And at the hard level, motherfuckers is dying. Like, it's dying. There's a story about a Cardinals player, this guy named Tony Jefferson. And I think I mentioned this to you a while ago.
Oh, you did. This was devastating.
So this guy played, I think this was like a week or two ago. He played, had an amazing game, had 11 tackles. He's a safety. So that's really, you want to tackle the person with the ball.
Okay.
So he had 11 tackles, huge game, got a concussion. Didn't even know he had a concussion, was driving home, had to pull over and just sat there for 30 minutes because he couldn't remember where he was or what just happened. He eventually was like jarred from this state because basically his family caught him like, yo, where the fuck are you? He eventually gets home and they're like, yo, your game, you had such a good... He was like, what? I don't remember. I played? I was good? He had to watch tape to remind himself that he played this game.
Damn.
It's more important to continue playing after something like that than to assess whether or not you have serious, serious problems.
Well, you're talking about, at least this dude was able to drive himself home. There's another article that you had me read about, his name is Nate?
Nate Jackson. Used to play for the Broncos.
The Broncos, right. And he wrote something that was in Gawker. I think he has a book coming out.
Yeah.
But it was just basically about all of the injuries that his body sustained while not just playing, but attempting to qualify while he was in college. You know, he's like, I was one of the only Division III guys who was at, I think, camp. Am I saying it wrong? It was like some sort of qualifying camp.
Training camp.
Right. You know, he injured himself I mean, it sounded like every single game, every single practice, and he was getting ice and stim, which is a term I actually know now. And
ice and stim stimulation. So basically,
electrical stimulation. Yeah. They put like electricity on you and try to stimulate your muscles to get them to, I guess, like activate, heal, mm-hmm. whatever. And he was doing whatever he could to be able to not even just necessarily move up through the depth. What is it called?
Depth chart.
The depth chart. Okay.
Good
job.
You're killing it.
Yeah. He wasn't just trying to move up through the depth chart. He was trying to like make sure that he actually like was able to stay on the team and was able to get through camp. Like his body was so fucked up when he started at 22 in the league. Like he had fucked his body up just trying to get there, and then he didn't ever have a chance to rest.
So every NFL player has, and basically what he was detailing was his injury file. Mm-hmm. And this injury file follows you throughout your entire career.
Oh, in the event that you want to file for workers' compensation.
Who would think that maybe after playing a sport that was really, like, that was maybe violent or, you know, a lot of contact, mm-hmm. that after that's done, you might want to appeal for increased compensation to cover some of the injuries that are directly related to this.
I mean, some of these guys, I don't even know how they're able to work.
Well, a lot of them aren't. And that's the issue. And it's at two touch points. You have the guys who, you know, they say, oh, these guys got to save their money. You know, this is coming, you know, but at the end of the day, you don't. This is your only way to provide for yourself or your family.
It's your profession.
You have no choice but to be able to continue because you don't have any other avenues. For a lot of people, some of them skated through college. Mm-hmm. You know, they played the sport because they knew where they were going. If you were on that NFL track, you know, you weren't too worried.
No.
But now that you're out of this sport, you were living at a level, you become used to that level, and then you can't continue to live at that level, not because you're running out of money, but because you have to fund your health care, which the costs are now skyrocketing. Because you've been hurt all your life. And they use this file that, you know, that they've contributed to, that they religiously document.
Yeah, like after every single game, after practices, anytime, I guess, sustained a major hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To deny you compensation. And that's fucked up. Because it creates a culture where I don't want my shit to get in the file.
No.
Because they're going to use it against me.
Exactly.
So I'm going to keep these injuries to myself, which does nothing but cause more injuries and more life-threatening injuries. And at the NCAA level, it's almost worse because if they get hurt, there's no workers' comp because they're not an employee.
Shit.
They're just out.
And if that's how you were funding your education, fucked.
You're assed out. Like, you're literally done. But once again, you know, to come back again, we overlook this because we need to maintain the institution.
Yes. Now, that was something that I've given a lot of thought to. And, you know, I told you that I see the value in football for other people. There's actually, I can't remember where it was. It could have been on BuzzFeed, but I could be wrong. Maybe it was Slate. There was an article earlier in the season, football season, yes, earlier in the season, about the Washington football squad and their name.
The Redskins, yeah.
I don't you say that, but you were referring to it. I understand.
I mean,
what you're
saying. I was just saying people need to know.
So they were talking about the name, and there's this guy who was, I think, a DC native, and he understood in principle why the name shouldn't be used, but he had a difficult time giving it up, which doesn't make any sense to me, but for the sake of the story, anyway. He had a difficult time giving the name up because their football team was something that brought a really divided city and a really divided area together. Like you said, football, you know, like we said, football is instant language. I see why people need it. I can see how they feel like they need it. But I don't understand why people are trying to maintain it in its current state. It's like people don't even want to consider that there might be another way that you could do football. And that got me thinking about what is it, whenever people get very, when I say people, like the general you, like whenever people in general are fiercely protecting something that almost doesn't make any sense or completely doesn't make any sense, I always wonder what are you holding on to? What are you protecting? And it seems like in this case, the clear answer with football is masculinity. I thought about it, and I'm like, well, to me, I don't give a fuck about football. I don't think football is important. I don't think it's necessary. I think it's boring. I think it's dry. Only thing I like about football is you can go to a bar. and you can eat chicken wings, and you can drink beer. Delicious chicken wings. And you can have a good time and, like, kind of hang out with your friends, and it gives you something to do. Like, I understand that. But other than that, I'm like, okay, I don't give a fuck about football. We might as well get rid of it. But no one's going to get rid of it. No one's going to get rid of it because football is, like, a beacon of masculinity. And we need masculinity. I'm not saying that we need it, like, in a real sense, but I think that people need to always bring masculinity back to the center of every conversation. I think it is one of the cornerstones. You know, patriarchy is one of the cornerstones of, like, all society. But we're speaking specifically about America. It's one of the cornerstones of American society. And football is a great way on Sunday, on Saturday, on Monday, Thursday. On Thursday. Yeah. Exactly. To bring masculinity back to the center and to value it and to celebrate it. And until we no longer need masculinity to be the center of everything, we're going to continue to have football.
I think that's right. And it's scary to agree with that as a fan, you know. But I think there's also an additional component. But to touch on the masculinity part, one of the reasons why I would agree mm-hmm. is to kind of dive into why I started playing football in the first place. Mm-hmm. So, like I said before, I was the scrawniest kid alive. Very, very skinny. I was just like bones and my head, which was pretty, you know, pretty large. Mm-hmm. And I started to get, after I got 14, everybody kind of hit their like muscular growth spurt, and I just got taller, didn't gain any weight. I started to get bullied a little bit. You know, I started to get picked on. People started to, you know, spread rumors like, oh man, he's not playing any like varsity sports. You know, he ain't on these girls like that. I mean, I was a nerd.
I'm aware.
You know,
I'm aware.
So these rumors, you know, the bullying would happen. It wasn't that bad. There were a lot of people who got bullied like a lot worse than mm-hmm. I did. But I was like, yo, I'm about to be proactive about this shit. So I knew that I enjoy sports. I'd always played sports. You know, I played pretty much everything except for like rugby or lacrosse or field hockey. So I was like, you know what? I can play football. Sure. I'm going to do that. Because football players get the girls, mm-hmm. get the respect.
Get the money.
I wasn't focused. I was right. 15. But in addition to that, they're also seen as these muscular gods almost, mm-hmm. which is this masculinity part. You know, I was looking to bolster my masculinity chops. And the crazy thing about it is it worked. As soon as I walked into the gym, folks was like, yo, E, you try to play football? You try to play football? Like, word? And I was like, yeah, I'm good. They were like, he gonna quit. You know, he ain't real.
I mean, you did. And
I did, but not immediately, you know?
They didn't know you was gonna make it through.
They didn't know I was gonna make the team. Nobody thought I was gonna make the team. So, you know, when folks saw I was, like, serious, I was in a gym, I was lifting every day, you know, like I said, I put on my five pounds.
I was gonna say.
They were like, yo, respect. So, like, some of the most popular folks in the school play football. They started dapping me up in the hallways. You know, I'm getting looks from them. Next thing you know, new girls start checking me out. They come coming to meet me at my locker. Even my family, crazy enough, even my family, once they heard I was playing football, they were like, yo, you playing football?
This sounds like Calvin got a job.
It was like Calvin got a job. Straight up. Like, I started getting calls from everybody, from like male family members, like, yo, come through, we're gonna watch football, I'm gonna grill. And I'm like, yeah, cool, sure. Cause like at the time, my dad, he wasn't super into sports. Like we would watch sports occasionally, but
he was like a basketball person.
Yeah, he also was a big basketball person. So he was like, okay, whatever.
Right.
But everybody else is like, yo, this is awesome. This is great. They were telling me their stories about mm-hmm. how they played. And it was like I was in this cool club that all my guy nerd friends were never really in. And that was amazing to me. But the more I like stayed in it, I was like, yo, this is cool and all. But I don't want to get knocked off every day to do this. Like, it's not that deep. It's really not. And so that's ultimately why I quit. But that brotherhood, quote unquote, mm-hmm. was awesome. It was amazing. And it was something that I think that feeling is mm-hmm. a part of what keeps that masculinity, as you say, that perception alive. And that's trippy.
Well, I can understand. Well, I mean, on like the mirror, not the mirror image of that, but I understand having played a girl sport, definitely that feeling of being on a team and all of you are in the trenches every single day, sweating and figuring it out and running the same, for you it's probably plays over and over again. We're running the same routines over and over and over and over and over again, getting cursed out by your coach, getting screamed at, people be crying and shit, you know, all, you know what I'm saying? It's like,
I mean, we was crying too.
Yes, you're in pain, you're crying, exactly. You lose shit, you're crying, exactly. It's like emotional, there's a lot going on. So I understand that. And I actually really understand, I really do understand the masculinity provides protection. But again, you need the protection because...
because of masculinity.
Yeah, like that's what I was going to say. Because, I mean, like, to put it very, 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 very short, you need it because people are going to want to beat your ass because you're a dude. You know what I'm saying?
Because, like, you're not a guy's guy.
Exactly. You're not a quote-unquote guy's guy. And in order for other people to know that they're guys' guys, that they're not soft or feminine or whatever, they need to beat your ass. They got to beat somebody's ass. Yeah. You know, the violence...
perpetuates.
Yeah, the violence... It's like if you understand... I understand what... some of what Jonathan Chait was saying when he was saying that the violence in football is at least organized, because... if you weren't getting knocked out on the football field, you were going to be getting your ass beat by other people.
Yeah, in the hallway.
Exactly, exactly, exactly.
In the classroom.
So yeah, I understand. I understand that. But masculinity provides protection from, it's like a counterattack.
Yeah. In addition, there's another component of it too. Like, a lot of people's fondest, I mean, this wasn't my reality, but a lot of people's families can only connect with the men in their lives through sports.
Mm.
Because, you know, you grow up...
women and men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally, if you want to go through dad or through granddad, you got to sit and watch the game with them. And that's, you know, sometimes for some people, that's the only time they really see emotions like joy coming from a guy. Because we can be so closed off. You know, there's all this push for us not to be emotional. And this is something Jonathan Chait kind of talks about, he kind of touches on it.
Mm-hmm.
This cliche notion of what it means to be a man. You know, you're supposed to be really tough, and that's, football players are tough. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to not buckle under pressure. Football players don't buckle under... well,
Ron Swanson.
Exactly. But the thing is, what people are realizing now is that shit doesn't work, and it's not healthy.
It's not healthy. It doesn't just harm the players, but just like you say, it's like football is an acceptable way for people to engage their emotions.
Yeah.
It's an acceptable way for a lot of men, a lot of straight men specifically, to engage with their emotions. Yeah, it's very interesting to me that sports are this sort of like way for them to kind of express themselves or to get close to other people or to share something intimate with other people, or even the part of being a team, that closeness. There's, have you seen the GIF this week of, like, I can't remember what basketball team it was, but there was one player who was sitting two seats over from another one on the bench, on sidelines, court side?
On the court.
Okay, whatever. And he fixed his teammate's headband. Like, it was kind of jacked up, so he just reached over and fixed it. And the dude was just sitting there like, it was cool for his friend to do that.
Yeah.
That's like how I know me and most of my friends will interact physically, especially with my female friends. We interact like that physically. But outside of a sports context, it's not necessarily acceptable for men to have that level of intimacy with each other. For straight men to have that level of intimacy with each other. And it's very... I wonder if that's something that people wouldn't... like, we've read a lot of things this week. And I've read a fair amount about football in general. I've seen that touched on. But sports are a way for straight men in, like, heterosocial relationships to have intimacy in a way that they are not going to get ridiculed for.
I mean... that's spot on. I mean, because even myself now, like, I don't, I mean, you know, I don't watch, like, I'm not watching Thursday night games.
No.
I'm not watching, you know, every now and again, I'm watching Sunday games.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm hanging out with, you know what I'm saying, when the bros is hanging out,
yeah,
bro night, we're watching football. We're watching sports.
Well, not only that, I hang out with y'all.
Yeah.
We all hang out together. We have like a mostly, I'd say, mixed as far as like men and women friend group. But we sometimes can, depending on who's around, lean heavily toward men. And when y'all hang out, if y'all are cooking out or grilling out or something like that together, a lot of times I'm not allowed to come until later because y'all are watching football. I never actually thought of it as, it's almost like a sacred space. where y'all are just being with each other in a way that is more acceptable than like maybe like the way that me and a lot of my girlfriends will spend time. We'll spend a lot of close one-on-one time together. We'll actually sit, and this is, I mean, we're speaking in broad generalizations, yeah. And we're speaking also specifically about ourselves and our experiences. I know that men and women and everybody, you know, in between or around that, outside of that, you know, people are different. People do things differently. But I would be lying if I said that I hadn't noticed a major difference in between the way that I relate when it's just me and my girlfriends and the way that I observe, you know, a lot of my guy friends spending time with each other.
That's true. Becomes just tradition almost of how you interact on those levels. So, you know, with some of my really close friends, we're like, you know, I'm like, yo, I haven't seen you in 2 weeks. Let's watch a game.
That's
and it's
true.
it's an easy engagement. We already, like, you don't have to plan. You I know I'm
you
either
know
gonna
what time.
See you. I'm either gonna see you at 1, 4, or 8.
Yeah.
You know, like one of those blocks, that's when we're gonna sit down. Somebody's gonna bring some beer. We're gonna sit, we're gonna talk, we're gonna talk about the game, we're gonna talk about other stuff in the commercials, mm-hmm. and we're just gonna dialogue, we're gonna shoot the shit, we're gonna enjoy each other's company, and that's when we have those, like you said, those kind of like intimate spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad that we associate those things with football, once again, to come back, because of how violent and hurtful it is on the screen or in real life at the game, tailgating even.
Yeah. You know, tailgating is so fucking fun, though.
It's amazingly fun. There are so many beloved social experiences mm-hmm. tied to this sport that it's going to be ridiculously hard to evolve it. And it's exactly what you say. It's the masculinity aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, people's familial relationships mm-hmm. tied to it. It's the money part of it.
I was just going
to
say the money.
It's all of those things working together to preserve
football as it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if it changes, then it, you know, and this is, once again, a broad stroke. And I don't think this is necessarily true. But if it changes, then it's not the same. You're not sitting there with the beer and then everybody jumps when there's this crazy hit where somebody goes airborne.
Yeah.
But what people forget is after somebody goes airborne,
they hit the ground.
They hit the ground and they cart them off in a stretcher. And you
that
don't
was stressing
know.
Out in life. If you saw some people fighting in the street, I did see people fight outside of the club, but they were mostly like slapping each other and missing. And then they scurried off down the street together, actually, I think, in a group. But if in real life you saw somebody get slapped the fuck out and they had to go away in a stretcher, you'd be fucked up for the day.
You're like, damn, you wonder what happened to this person.
You'd be like, crazy.
And, you know, and we read, and the sad thing is, like, when I play fantasy, I'm reading injury reports. Like,
you want to see who's gonna play.
I'm like, ah, this motherfucker gonna be all right. And if somebody, you know, if it's a concussion or something like that, and I'm like, yeah, he's probably gonna play. And you don't process the week to week. Oh, who's playing? Who's not playing? Who's hurt? Who's not hurt? Oh, I hope they get over it. He'll be back soon. You don't process. Yo, he's been hurt 6 weeks out of 17.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, what does that mean for this person's body? That's the reason why I'm really starting to struggle with continuing being a fan of football. You know, eventually, I'm gonna have kids.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to tie those happy emotions to that sport.
Really?
No, because at the end of the day, they might want to play.
Yeah, and you don't want to do that.
And I don't want them to do that. There's potential for a concussion. There's a potential for death.
Oh, spinal injuries.
Spinal, like, paralyzed. Like, there's so many things that can go wrong. And me sitting there happy with a beer on Sunday, rooting for it, is not the signal that I want to send. It's not. So, like, I don't know how I'm going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
But I can definitely see it being something that's phased out. But the thing about that is that's not gonna fix this. No. Like, that's gonna change my immediate.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and I'm gonna be honest with you, in the future, I don't know how much control I will have over that in my household, because I don't know how much my husband is gonna be into watching football. I mean, I'm gonna be honest. In all reality, I've only really dated like 2 people who actually really watch sports.
Yeah.
So I might be able to like get out of
it. You can get over
it. I think I don't think I It's not, it's never been like, I've never dated somebody and sports were on all the time. Most of the time they're not on, we're watching like fucking Family Guy, which is honestly worse. But yeah, I don't know how much control I'll even have over that in my household in the future. It's like, there's so, like you said, there are what, I think maybe possibly hundreds of millions of football fans in the country.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say.
How many people live in America? Like 450 million people?
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more. I would say if you got 200 million people, probably do like at least 100 million people in the United States probably casually watch football.
Yeah. There's just so much tied to it. And even then, football as a structure, I mean, this is also what they really struggle with and what they're rebelling against at every level. If you reform it at the NFL level, you have to reform it at the NCAA level. And then it's going to trickle down.
And then Pop Warner and everything.
And people are going to fight that tooth and nail.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, we don't even
have fucking minimum wage the same in every state. You think folks just gonna let football just like roll out?
But the thing is, I don't even know how you do that. Like, how do you take that? You need the hits. Like, you need the hits
to make the sport quote unquote what it is.
To make it what it is, you can't just have passing plays. And even on passing plays, there are big hits. Like, there's just, it's so ingrained in the sport. I don't know how you could effectively reform it. And the people, you know, they try new helmet technologies. They try to limit practice, you know, how many hours and minutes you can practice. And all those things help. But at the end of the day, on any given Sunday.
Okay.
You saw what I did there.
I saw what you did.
You can go out there and you could, you know, really, really, truly get hurt.
Yeah.
And I'm not okay with that.
That is, I mean, I had a feeling that you were headed that way. But I didn't know that you did not see football as a part of your future or as a part of your, you know, hypothetical future, children's future.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know the timeline, but at some point it's going to change. I'm just going to watch basketball. Soccer.
I will say we were out last weekend with a bunch of friends and it was interesting because everyone knows I don't like sports. So people typically don't talk to me about them. But y'all were talking about playing sports when you were young, I think like middle school, high school age. And everybody was comparing what sports they played, what they lettered in, what years they did, what years they didn't. And I noticed that there's at least 5 black men there.
Yeah.
And all of y'all have varying athletic abilities. Some of y'all, I didn't know we even had athletic abilities or have touched ball sports. I didn't know that was a thing that y'all had dabbled in. One of our friends plays basketball. I mean, when we talk about ball is life. Like
ball is life.
This motherfucker is shooting in the gym.
Shooting in the gym.
At least 5 days a week. Like, hashtag fucking ball is life.
Yeah.
But I wasn't surprised when he said this, but when the rest of you guys started talking about periods of time in your life, your young lives, where you were playing basketball for, I mean, like, after school for 3 hours. Or you would, like, if you said you used to work at the YMCA and you would open the gym late. And y'all would just play after hours for like a real, until you got called by your mom to come home.
Basically.
Like that, again, like that, I think about like what kind of discipline that, the discipline, the love, the, you know, the teamwork, the camaraderie that goes with that. It's very interesting to me that people look at basketball, which is a major sport, obviously. The NBA is a huge organization. And it's very interesting that when people go to defend football, they just kind of bypass like all the same qualities that are in basketball that aren't fucking killing people. So, I mean, you know, maybe we all make the switch over to maybe like in the future, in my lifetime. If hashtags are in the, listen, I'm giving you a story right now. In the future of my lifetime, if hashtags are still a thing, and like, how about I outlive hashtags actually? But if hashtags are still a thing, eventually we get rid of the NFL, no more football. And then like when the NBA takes over, basically the country, there's gonna be like screen go black on television, hashtag ball is life, to let everybody know basketball's taking the fuck over and they got shit now. I'm ready for that day. I don't fully like, I don't want to shit on people that watch football because it's a journey for everybody. It's a journey for everybody, but if basketball took everything over, I wouldn't be mad. You can actually see what people look like when they play basketball, whereas football, just speaking superficially, you can't see anyone's face. Like Richard Sherman, fucking bonus. When he took his helmet off, I saw what he looked like. I was like, what?
I mean, obviously I don't connect with it on that particular level. Whatever. But yeah, I mean, I don't honestly see it happening in our lifetime.
No, I don't see it either.
unless there's some
I think somebody would have to die on national television.
Yeah. Consistently.
More than once.
Well, yeah,
yes,
I was gonna say consistently.
Exactly. More
for
than
it
once.
To be, for it to change. And it's something that also, I mean, this is, I think this is probably one of the, like, the last things that I have on it. I think until we get to, like, until we reform how often it's on TV, and that's only increasing how often it's on TV, it's really not going to die down, because that's what fuels it. People watch it every week, and so it stays on their mind, you know.
And not only that, it's, like, so easy now with subscription services and with online streaming and things like that. It's very easy to get a constant stream of the sport all of the time on any device.
And that fuels kids. You know, they see it and they're like, oh, I see this all the time. It's always with me. Oh, let me check that out. Maybe I'll try, you know, or maybe my dad's going to push me in a Pop Warner or, you know, something like that. But those are the things keeping kind of the engine going. And honestly, I don't see that changing anytime soon.
I don't see it changing either. There's too many people that make money from football being televised and broadcast. Not just, you know, obviously on television and on radio still.
Yeah.
And on the internet, too many people make too much money. And too many people, you can't see me right now, but I'm holding my chest like Mariah Carey. Too many people are protected by the masculinity that football provides.
Yeah.
So. Gosh, I'm feeling a little sad.
That's heavy. We need a beer.
I'm drinking one.
I'm not, sadly.
It's nasty. The one I'm drinking is nasty, so it's fine.
Yeah. This is the leftover beer.
I know. This beer has been here for 6 weeks. Every single week I'm here, you open up your refrigerator and look at this sad-ass fucking... It's just let y'all know, don't drink fucking Original Sin. Oh, this is not a beer.
It's like cider.
Oh, maybe I think it's nasty because I thought it was a beer. It's still nasty, though.
That's the shit we
don't drink Original Sin elderberry cider. It's nasty. That's it. Thank you
so
much.
Thanks, guys.
We appreciate it.
This has been great. This is actually, I mean, I thought this was pretty good.
This was actually, and it wasn't too difficult for me to talk about, considering I don't know or give a shit about football. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we can do it again.
Yeah.
Hopefully not as a result of someone
actually dying.
Dying.
No, we don't want that to happen.
So, anyway, till then.
Till then. Bye.
Bye.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.